It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/sportsfan and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Steve in for Henry. Henry was in earlier in the day on a Monday for Chad Hartman between noon and 3. Same deal Tuesday and Wednesday. I'll be in following the ball game on Tuesday night. Eric's in following the Twins and Astros in the final game of the three-game series on Wednesday night. Twins win 9-5 the final. Jorge Polanco had four hits, including a two-run homer. Drove in four runs. The Twins won four in a row, and they lead the division. Jay Codorizzi won his second straight start. He is 2-2, allowed two runs and eight hits in 5 2/3 at Minute Maid Park. Michael Pineda on the mound tomorrow night in Game 2, or officially now it's Tuesday, so Tuesday night, our pregame at 6:30. First pitch 7:10, Chris Atterbury and Dan Gladden. Corey Provis taking the series off. Quick update on the NBA playoffs. The Bucks get a sweep of the Pistons. Giannis Antetokounmpo, 41 points, 127-104 over Detroit. Meanwhile, it's late. Utah's going to beat Houston. It's 106-91 with seconds remaining in the game. Houston would still be up 3-1 in that series. Meanwhile, a female sports reporter has filed a lawsuit accusing new Sacramento Kings coach Luke Walton of sexual assault. TMZ reported Monday night, citing legal documents, that Kelly Tennant is suing Walton. TMZ reports that Tennant claims she went to Walton's hotel room to discuss a book she was writing when Walton pinned her to the bed, forcibly kissed her, and groped her. The alleged incident happened before Walton became coach of the Lakers in 2016 and while Tennant worked for Sportsnet LA. Stanley Cup playoffs, Dallas eliminates Nashville 2-1 in overtime. They advance to the second round. How about that? The Predators and the Jets out of the playoffs. Meanwhile, Carolina beat Washington 5-2 to force a game 7 in that series out east. And you're up to date on the sports headlines here at CCO. My good buddy Robert Zimmerman, my favorite Space and Science writer, is going to join us in a little bit. A lot to talk about there. A lot of news from the world of space and space exploration. Some good news and some bad news as of late for SpaceX. We all know what's been going on with Boeing and on the aircraft side of the business, but Boeing hasn't had a lot of good news on their space side as well. So we'll get into that in a moment with Robert Zimmerman, my favorite space and science writer here on CCO. It's good to visit with you, Bob, as always. And I hope things are well as things heat up in the desert.
They're getting comfy. What do you mean?
Yeah, I shouldn't rub it in. It's 43 and windy here in the Twin Cities right now. So.
Oh, that's nice. Probably 80 today. Yeah. I'm not going to. You rub it in. You mean I'm not going to rub it in.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You made the wise move being born and raised in New York City and then spending a lot of time on the East Coast. Finally, you made the right move out to Arizona. I know you love it out there.
Yes, it's quite nice. You know, as I mentioned before, we do a lot of outdoor stuff. I do a lot of cave exploration and a lot of hiking. We do so much hiking that I wrote a hiking guidebook for the southern Arizona area as part of my, since I'm a writer, it's the easiest book I ever wrote. As long as I was doing the hikes, I figured I'll do a guidebook.
Oh, I love southern Arizona. My daughter goes to school at U of A, and we've had a chance to explore and get out to the Desert Museum and check out other parts of scenery. And what's so wonderful, and I'm not sure if this is what attracted you to southern Arizona, But there are some wonderful telescopes, and amateur astronomy is huge in that part of the world.
Oh, yeah. Well, one of the reasons we went to Tucson is because, as a writer, writing science and stuff, you got the university here with a lot of astronomy and science and a great university library to access. So that's part of the reason we're here. Absolutely.
Let's get into the big story. SpaceX had this huge success, Falcon Heavy launched successfully. They were able to land all three first stages. We understand that the center core, if you will, was damaged somewhat in its return to shore from the drone ship. But, you know, the videos, the launch went off without a hitch. Just an extraordinary achievement. They had the man capsule test before that go very successfully. And now, over the weekend, we understand that there was a test gone awry.
This is a big deal, unfortunately, and it's very bad news. It's really unfortunate what has happened. By the way, the Falcon Heavy launch was a spectacular success. The core stage, they wanted to get that off as soon as possible to their customer. And they were, therefore, did not yet have their, what they call their Octagrabber robot drone on the drone barge to grab and secure the core stage. So what happened is they had heavy seas. And they were going to do this with a crew of humans. But the heavy seas, they decided they didn't want to risk anyone's life. And so the heavy seas tipped the core stage over. They lost the top half of it, but the bottom half is where the engines are. And so that's a good thing. They'll have that. And the most important thing about that core stage is it's the first they've recovered any of it, and they can now look at it to see what kind of stress it goes through, because it does go through much more stress than the outer stages. And that will serve them for upgrading future Falcon Heavy core stages. But the news you mentioned, the really bad news about Saturday's they call it anomaly. Essentially, it was an explosion. The Dragon manned capsule that they did an unmanned test flight for in March, quite 100% successfully. They were intending to use that capsule for their what they call the launch abort test sometime in June. In other words, they would attach that capsule, reuse it, put it on top of a Falcon 9 rocket, and then during launch, they would do a launch abort. It would be making believe that the first stage was failing on the Falcon 9 rocket, and the Dragon capsule would separate from the rocket and then use the Super Draco engines, thrusters it has, and parachutes to get away from a failing first stage and land safely in the ocean. And so they want to do a launch abort to make sure that during a launch, the capsule can get away from a failing first stage and bring its crew back to the ground safely, to the ocean safely, and then be recovered. So they were going to reuse that capsule. That was the capsule they were doing a variety of engine tests this past weekend and before this weekend. And what they were doing is they were just testing the Super Draco thrusters to make sure they were in fine shape after the unmanned test flight. And they've done this dozens and dozens of tests. They've done many, many engine tests. And they had done a bunch of tests. And then they were counting down to another test of the engines, and prior to the end of the countdown, there's an explosion. And that's all we really know. It essentially has destroyed that capsule. Why there was an explosion, we don't know. There could have been something wrong with the test equipment that caused it. There could have been something wrong with the capsule caused during the unmanned test flight. For example, the Draco and Super Draco engines, those thrusters, they use what they call hypergolic fuels, which are somewhat toxic, but they're very good in that they that you have a fuel in the oxidizer, and upon contact, they immediately ignite, which means you don't need any ignition source. And they've been, but I must mention that spaceships, spacecraft have been using those kind of engine thrusters now for 50 years. They're not new technology. But there might be something having to do with these thrusters that when they landed in the ocean, the salt water, something might have affected them, and that might have caused the explosion. Now, I'm totally speculating. We do not know. Of course, they're going to have to go through this and figure out what caused the problem. If there is a fundamental engineering issue with the Dragon capsule, they're going to have to rebuild or redesign, and that's going to be a significant delay. If that isn't the case, they still have to make their customer, NASA, happy, and NASA, being the timid bureaucracy that it is not going to be happy quickly. And so no matter what happens, we almost certainly, they were going to plan to do their launch abort in June and hopefully follow up with the manned mission in July or by the summer for sure. I would say that's almost out the window, almost certainly out the window now. They will not fly this year. And unfortunately, Boeing has issues. That's the other manned capsule, commercial manned capsule. They almost certainly will not. They're right now hoping to fly by the end of this year, but it's pretty likely they're not. They had their own engine thruster failure about a year ago, and they've been trying to figure out the engineering design issue there and fix it and make sure everything's okay. And so that's delayed them as well. So that's the really bad news. I fear NASA's timid bureaucracy is going to slow this down a lot. And that's the one concern, the biggest concern I have. I don't want them to be rush the investigation, but NASA's tendency is just the opposite. For the last few decades, they stretch out their investigations much too long. So that's my concern. I don't know. Well, we do not know what happens, but this is really a setback. It's an unfortunate setback for American manned space flight.
Yeah, and Bob, let's dig a little deeper into this. First of all, there's still a lot of unknowns. Are you surprised by that we just keep hearing the term anomaly, even though there were photos from people on the beach several miles away that saw a plume of smoke, and there just isn't a lot of information forthcoming on what happened?
All right. Well, we do know this. One thing I can say is that, yes, the term anomaly is the kind of term that bureaucracies and even businesses too will often use to understate the seriousness of something going wrong. Yeah. It's another variation of a phrase I really despise, glitch. You know, we just had a little glitch, and it could be a giant explosion. But they say it was just a glitch. And so that is, to a certain extent, what's happening here. And there has been some criticism, I think, of SpaceX for using the term, because it does make it sound like it's less serious. What SpaceX has going for me is a remarkable reputation for being pretty open and above board about when something goes wrong. They have proprietary reasons for not sometimes giving us all the details, but when something has gone wrong in the past, as they figure it out, they have a very good track record, much better than NASA, I must tell you, of telling us up front what they figured out and what was wrong and how they're going to fix it within the limits of proprietary engineering. They don't want to give away their secrets because they make money on those secrets. So from that sense, I don't get too upset by the term. One of the problems you got is, what do you call this? An explosion. Well, yeah, but if you don't know what caused it, the explosion could give you an impression that might be inaccurate. So they're trying to use that more general term. Once again, it is those general terms are almost always used to try to downplay the seriousness of the accident. I'm not going to do that. This was a serious problem, and it's going to delay things.
Let's jump into the bigger picture of this launch escape system. If memory serves, the space shuttle really didn't have that.
Oh, correct.
You know, once they launched, and we saw, unfortunately, with Challenger when things went wrong. They went terribly wrong. But if memory serves, there was some sort of launch escape system, Mercury, Gemini, Apollo?
Oh, yes. The rocket-launched American capsules before the shuttle had a launch abort system, just as the Russians designed, when the Soviet Union was building their rockets, designed launch abort systems. And I will point out that the only time a launch abort system has actually been used and used successfully, no failure in these things, have been on Russian rockets. In fact, we saw a launch abort occur on a Soyuz rocket this past October. No lives were lost. The astronauts landed safely when they had a failure on the first stage of the Soyuz rocket. And yes, the Gemini, most people today might not literally remember this, but if they've done any kind of checking into that, you might remember, you would see that on top of the Mercury capsule, there's like a tower on the rocket was sitting on the launch pad. Same thing with the Gemini and same thing with the Apollo, a tower above the capsule. What that tower was it had had rockets on it. It had thrusters. And if something was to go wrong, explosive bolts would separate the capsule from the rocket, and then those thrusters would lift the capsule away from the rocket, and then the tower would be separated from the capsule, and the parachutes would release, and the thing would land. And they tested those on all three of the Gemini, Mercury, and Apollo capsules prior to the manned launches. They didn't use a full rocket launch. They used smaller rockets to smaller versions, at least just test it with the upper stage. So yes, they had this. The shuttle did not. And this was an interesting design choice that NASA made. 2020 hindsight, one could question it. In fact, one should question it. And I agree that that NASA's reluctance not to have such a thing now is probably fueled from their own embarrassment by not having one, causing the death of the astronauts on the Challenger accident.
It's way too early to speculate, but could there be a complete redesign where NASA says, you know what, this idea of having this fuel in the capsule along with these thrusters on the SpaceX capsule, that we want to go back to the old tower design?
You're asking a very good question there, and this is bringing back my fear of the NASA timid bureaucracy. It's very likely they might do that because, for example, SpaceX initially did not want to use parachutes to bring this capsule back to Earth, even from orbit. They wanted to land it vertically using these Super Draco engines, just like they do with their first stages. And if there's any company or aerospace company in the world that knows how to land vertically, it is SpaceX. But NASA told them, no, we don't want to take that kind of risk. We want you to use parachutes instead because it's tried and true, and therefore it's safer. And SpaceX wants to serve its customer, and so they went along with that. That had a lot of ramifications. I could go into it. It essentially ended SpaceX's effort to send a Dragon capsule to Mars because they couldn't do the development work they wanted to do on the vertical landing. I do not know what NASA is going to do here. I have to say, I fear their timidity. I've said it several times now, and I can't help but say it again. They have a tendency, NASA, to they have the attitude, failure is not an option, but this is rocket science, and you can't accomplish anything without taking risks. SpaceX is willing to take risks, not with people's lives, if they can, that's one of the reasons the launch abort is there, and it's one of the reasons they didn't rescue that core stage on the Falcon Heavy. But at the same time, you have to take risks with your actual engineering and launch sometimes when it's not completely worked out so you can do some development. And I fear NASA's going to step in and say, nope, you got to get it perfect beforehand. And so we might be waiting years before we get to launch.
Mm. Yeah, bad news indeed. Yeah. Quick break. We have more with Robert Zimmerman, my favorite space and science writer. His website, behindtheblack.com, and he's written some wonderful books over the years, and those are available at the website as well, including one of my all-time favorites, Genesis, the Story of Apollo 8. It is available in ebook form wherever you buy books. It is 12:25 here at CCO. 43 degrees, north winds at 9 here on an early Tuesday morning. Steve in for Henry Lake. Henry was in earlier in the day for Chad Hartman. Same deal on Tuesday and Wednesday. Henry in for Chad between noon and 3. I'll be in following the Twins game again tomorrow night. Twins won 9-5 in Houston in game one of the three-game series. Pleased to be joined by Robert Zimmerman, my favorite space and science writer. Follow-up. A little bit more on this manned space flight in the delays. I know when we had talked earlier, you had concerns that NASA is not in any hurry to have SpaceX or Boeing actually deliver astronauts to the International Space Station. I think we still don't know the full story about what happened on Saturday, but nevertheless, NASA is stalling a little bit because they have their own plans.
The bureaucracy war that's going on in Washington, D.C. is equivalent to the Cold War between the United States and the Soviet Union, where the Soviet Union was a top-down, centrally controlled communist government, and the U.S. believed in bottom-up freedom. And what we have now is a war where you've got private enterprise, bottom-up private companies, competing against the top-down big bureaucracies, Soviet-style, communist-conceived federal government. And there is a war going on within NASA, within the federal bureaucracy, and within the executive branch between these two factions. There are many people in that bureaucracy in the federal government who do want to see freedom and private enterprise take the bulk of the action for a lot of reasons, but there are just as many who want to maintain their power, their turf, their power, their control over the exploration of space. And so NASA's been building its SLS Orion system for years, and if NASA had not been I think slow walking this, Dragon capsule could have carried astronauts to the space station 3 years ago. And I think one of the reasons that NASA's slow walking it is because their SLS Orion manned capsule is not going to launch with people on it at the earliest till 2024. And they don't want these private capsules to be too far ahead of them because it makes them look really absurd, especially since they've been developing this for a lot longer and have spent 10 times as much money. And so that's part of the politics here. There's no doubt about that. I'm a strong critic of NASA in this way, and I probably irritate a lot of people at NASA because they say, no, that's not what we're doing. But I don't buy it. I'm skeptic when it comes to the corruption in government. I'm not skeptical of the corruption. I'm not going to be fooled. I've been fooled too many times by the bureaucracies of government making promises and not delivering, and instead doing this slow walking gamesmanship. And so I see it going on here, and I'm going to say it. So what'll go on with Dragon? A lot of this depends on what the Trump administration wishes to do. It's very clear in the last 6 months that the Trump administration is losing patience with the bureaucratic NASA-built rocket and its slow development. And they've basically given SLS Orion a deadline of the end of 2020 to get that first unmanned test flight off. And it is questionable whether NASA can do that. And it's basically what the Trump administration is basically saying is, if you can't, we're going to go to other people. And there are other options, such as the Falcon Heavy. And so the Trump administration could make sure that this investigation of this accident or failure this past weekend is not delayed. They could make a difference. We'll see. I'm not sure they're. even government politicians, they don't like to push this kind of stuff, because if something goes wrong, they then get the blame. They really would rather, their motive, they tend to favor the slow, careful investigation, because their government and politicians are no different than the bureaucrats. They don't like to take risks, and they don't like to be exposed to risks. And so they tend to favor the slow, tedious, safe options.
Now, before we take a break here for the weather, I want to follow up on that and understand SpaceX wants to make sure this system works correctly.
Yes.
And I would assume that once everyone understands what happened, that they are going to put their best people on it to get this thing fixed. And it seems to me it won't happen in a week or two, but it's reasonable to me that this could happen in potentially weeks or months, not years.
Yes, if we left this up to SpaceX, I am fully confident that they would be able to figure out what the problem is, come up with a solution, and be flying again within 6 months. And I use as an example the Falcon 9 rocket, when they had the launch pad explosion, and that was an explosion, and it was an explosion in a way that had never happened on a launch pad, as far as I had known, ever before, while fueling was occurring. Nothing was going on unusual. There wasn't actual ignition and launch. They just were fueling the rocket, and suddenly, boom. And they launched 4 months later, 4.5 months later. They figured out what the issue was. They moved to fix it, and they did. And so if it's up to SpaceX entirely, I am confident they would launch quickly. But it's not. And part of the issue we have to recognize, too, and NASA has the right to be careful here. It is, they are the customer. They're paying the bills. And so in that sense, I don't blame them for wanting to be careful and make sure everything is covered. But this isn't just private customer and a private company. This is the U.S. government doing things for the U.S. people. And there are issues here that go beyond just making sure everything works. The reason we are in space and the government is in space is providing somewhat prestige for the nation that we are participant in the exploration of the solar system. And if NASA is going to be too timid about that, then we do not get, as Americans, what we're supposed to be getting out of that.
A quick break. We'll have more with Robert Zimmerman, my favorite space and science writer, his website, Behind the Black. When we come back, we'll talk about one of the other posts on his website. Independent study finds NASA's Mars plans infeasible. I guess we'll pick on NASA in a moment. We continue with my favorite space and science writer, Robert Zimmerman, his website, Behind the Black. We talked about NASA earlier, but something at your website, very interesting to me. The headline was tremendous. Independent study finds NASA's Mars plans infeasible.
Yes, that's what they are. They've been that way for decades. I should point out that NASA has been promising us the moon. Sorry, that was no pun intended. It's been promising us a lot of things for decades, and they never deliver. This is what's getting back to the SLS rocket. Let's use that as an example. That was proposed by George Bush Jr. in 2004. 2004, that's 15 years ago. In 15 years, NASA has yet to launch that rocket,
billions,
the Orion capsule. And that's the rocket they are saying is going to take us to Mars. And NASA's been saying they're going to do it by 2033 in 14 years from now. 14 years. It's taken them 15 years to not launch the rocket. They won't launch the rocket with unmanned tests for another year plus, and they will not launch it with people on board for another 3 years, 2024 likely. So they're not going to do their first launch with this until 2024, and they claim they're going to get to the moon, to Mars by 2033. It's not possible. And this independent study was ordered by Congress to look at the feasibility of NASA's plans. And it was done, it's part of the political game going on in D.C. The people in D.C. are all cowards. They can't make, this is politicians too, they can't make any kind of decision on their own mentality. They've got to have a think tank analysis which demonstrates that they have justification for doing it. And so a lot of people in Congress wanted to have evidence in their hands that will demonstrate that the SLS Orion is a pork boondoggle and therefore maybe is not going to get what we want, and so therefore we should cut it. And so that, I think, was the goal here, to get this policy paper published, this independent study. The problem with this study is that for a lot of people in Congress, the gigantic budget of the to get accomplished what NASA wants, get to Mars, and the fact that the study says they might be able to do it by 2037, though that's pretty unlikely too, for a lot of people in Congress, this giant budget and extended schedule is not a bug, it's a feature. Because they don't look at any kind of NASA program and project as trying to get into space. They see it merely as pork distributing money to their buddies and to their local constituents. And so I don't know what's going to happen with a report like this. It's without doubt, it's true. We have to, as taxpayers, recognize that nothing NASA is telling us about their its plans to get to Mars using its rockets and capsules and its gateway in lunar orbit, none of that is going to accomplish anything within my lifetime. I'm not a young guy. But if you've got a 12-year-old, it's very likely that 12-year-old will not see NASA's accomplishments. Because if you were 12 in 1980, you haven't seen any of NASA's promises, and you're getting old at this point. So that's what this is about. It's a political game. It is the shot across the bow, Steve, for the eventual effort by some people in Congress to get SLS shut down.
And hopefully the dollars won't go away, but in turn, as we've seen with the successes so far for SpaceX and these other companies, even Boeing moving forward and others, if the government has a reason to go back to the moon, let them do it.
Yeah, I got to be clear here. The kind of debate that used to happen in the second half of the 20th century about whether we should even do this, that's a debate that's over. The American people and the U.S. government, and the fact that many other countries now are beginning to do this very successfully, there is a real competition, and the U.S. government and the American people recognize we have to participate. To paraphrase John Kennedy, free people. This is an effort that free people must fully share, and so we recognize that now. So no matter what happens, if SLS gets cut, it's not going to be that we won't be doing it. It's going to be because we've decided to go another route, and that's one of the debates going on in Washington D.C. now, having to do with SLS and Falcon Heavy and private enterprise. And the Trump administration has made it clear it's considering commercial launches to get this stuff accomplished. It isn't considering shutting it down, the idea of Americans exploring the solar system. They are considering the idea of shifting to private enterprise to do it. And that's really where the debate's going to be. I'm not afraid of the U.S. government not willing to do this. I'm afraid that they will choose to do it in a very bad way. And they have almost no decision by the so-called elites, and they're so-called, I mean that with contempt, and we'll use the word elites, contempt. There's been no decision made in Washington, D.C. on almost any issue that has been thoughtful or intelligent or to the benefit of that country for the last 25 years. I'm pretty down on what our government has achieved in the last 25 years. It's been pretty bad. And making a shift here might move us in the right direction again.
Quick break. We'll have more with Robert Zimmerman, and we'll pay tribute. Another story from last week on Behind the Black. Hubble celebrates 29 years in orbit. We'll get Bob's thoughts on that in a moment. Few minutes left with Robert Zimmerman, my favorite space and science writer. Steve Thompson in for Henry Lake. We have all the news coming up at 1 o'clock. From behind the black, Hubble celebrates 29 years in orbit. That's really a cool image.
Yes, one of thousands and thousands and thousands of endless cool images from Hubble. The only thing I have to mention is this has been a downer appearance with you, Steve. I'm sorry, but Hubble is on its last legs. Hopefully it'll make 30 years next year since its launch, but it's working on its last three gyros, and when one fails, they will go down to one gyro mode, and we will not get sharp images like this anymore. And that's a sad thing, unfortunately. Great achievement by America to have built this telescope. Spectacular, changed our view of the universe entirely, Steve.
Yeah, it just an extraordinary achievement in the fact that there was a mistake made when it was originally put into orbit, and then there was a fix, and since then, wow.
Yeah, the repair of Hubble was a big deal, and it's a demonstration of, you know, the brilliance of the design of the telescope. They designed it so it could be repaired by human beings, and that meant that the telescope we actually have up there now is a state-of-the-art telescope. At least it's now only 10 years old, even though it was built 34, almost three and a half decades ago. It's not, all the instruments have been replaced. Everything's been upgraded. And so we have a state-of-the-art instrument in orbit. It's a shame that they don't do this more often. They continue to do this. That's the thing. Because James Webb, if it ever launches, is not going to be repairable or upgradable. It's going to be out there a million miles from Earth. And it'll either work or it won't, and that'll be the end of it.
Mm. Well, always a pleasure to visit with you. Our time goes too quickly. Behind the Black, all of your books are available in some way, shape, or form, including Genesis, the story of Apollo 8. I highly recommend.
Thank you, Steve. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Thanks so much. Robert Zimmerman, my favorite space and science writer, and hopefully we will get some good news on the anomaly, if you will, that happened over the weekend with that test of the Dragon capsule down in Florida. There's just not been a lot of information. There's been a lot of speculation, but I would assume at some point in the near future we'll get more news on what exactly happened and how they'll be able to proceed, because it looks like that capsule is our best shot for human spaceflight in the near term, as Boeing's capsule, the Starliner, is delayed. Tonight, clearing out, lows in the mid-30s. Tomorrow, warmer, sunny, mid-60s. Wednesday, warmer, partly cloudy, highs in the mid-70s. Twins win. They beat the Astros 9-5. Same two teams on Tuesday night. And then, of course, again on Wednesday night. I'll be back for Henry on Tuesday night following the Twins game. Erickson following the Twins on Wednesday night. By the way, tune in to hear Henry Lake tomorrow or Tuesday between noon and 3, sitting in for Chad Hartman here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Big thanks to Shaletta Brundage, our producer, tonight here in studio. We have all the news coming up at 1 o'clock. Don't forget, Dave Lee in the morning news gets your day started right on a Tuesday morning. Award-winning news, traffic, weather together, and, of course, sports headlines all morning long here on News Talk 830 WCCO.